Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome to hour number 2 live right here on this Tuesday on the early line all across the Sports Grid Network. He is Donnie Wrightside. I am Ben Stevens. We start with Major League Baseball. We go to the PGA Tour, some NFL conversations following the draft, and then a ton of basketball with 3 more games, another triple header on this Tuesday around the association. DRS, we start in MLB. As I said right before we ended our opening hour to get to hour number 2, Justin Turner, what a start it has been for his first season in Toronto. He hits 2 dingers yesterday to pace the Blue Jays to a 6-5 win over the Kansas City Royals. Toronto was a -164 home money line favorite against KC. JT is batting .317 this year. 2 long balls yesterday, 4 home runs early in this MLB campaign.
Yeah, I mean, you're going up and down that lineup because you need him here. George Springer, .218 on the season. Vladimir Guerrero Jr., .228 on the season. You take a look at some of the other guys, Biggio, .229. I mean, you're not getting those performances that you expected from, not only from a batting average perspective, but a power surge perspective. And you take a look at Turner, who is a veteran now, DHing last night and provides the 3 RBI that you needed. Sometimes you can get lightning in a bottle as an older player. We'll see how long, Ben, it lasts here in 2024. But it's a great start for the Blue Jays. Jace, you're getting a lot of value off of Turner. By the way, I always have pet peeves with some players across all sports here. Take the pine tar away from Justin Turner. Do we have to see the back of his jersey completely laced with pine tar because he puts his pine tar bat on his back when he bats? I mean, whoever is the actual clubhouse attendant that has to do that, I wouldn't even wash his uniform ever. How about that?
All right, fair enough. Good point there. 9 years for Justin Turner with the Dodgers. Spent last season in Boston with the Red Sox. This his first year in Toronto. By the way, KC now has dropped 3 in a row. Toronto with the win gets to an even 500 mark of 15-15. These two teams faced off last week during the middle of the week in Kauffman in KC. The Royals won 3 of 4 games in that set. JT's former team, that would be the Dodgers, in offensive display yesterday out in the desert. LA wins 8-4 over Arizona. Their 31st game of the year. They are 19-12. The Dodgers have been booked as a favorite in 30 of 31. Yesterday, though, not the longest price you will see on LA, -134. Total of 10 goes over because the Dodgers made the most of their at-bats. They did not strike out. Nobody on the Dodgers recorded a K at the dish yesterday. The first time that has happened this season in Major League Baseball. These stats courtesy of our producer, the stat man, Joe Friezo. The first time the Dodgers as a team have not struck out in a single game in franchise history dating back to 2016. The Dodgers play 8. They win in Arizona.
That's pretty impressive at that point because everybody strikes out. And literally, it's crazy that you don't get a strikeout per inning from your baseball team, let alone an entire game. And we did think there were going to be runs yesterday. This game posted up as a double-digit total, and rightfully so. Paxton coming into this game, the big maple, you're trying to see how he was going to do because his ERA was quite low, but his xFIP number was high. And they got to him here. 5 innings pitched, 4 earned runs. That should be good enough to win if you knock off a starter out in the 5th inning, get 4 runs off him. But also, Henry was okay despite having bad numbers coming coming into this game, and he wasn't terrible, Ben. Four innings pitched, two earned runs, but it was the bullpen that really gave it up for the Arizona Diamondbacks. That's what happens with the Dodgers. When I said it, 19-12, not an unbelievably impressive number, but still a first place number in the NL West. This team will wear you down at bat after at bat. And yes, we're still waiting for some of these guys to really show up this season, but you're getting the young guys there. How about Pages last night? Three RBI effort, hitting close to 300 on the season here. The Dodgers always seem to blend that good young talent coming up with some of those veterans here that are high priced. It looks like they're doing it again this year, and rightfully so.
Again, Los Angeles, seven games above 500, 19-12. The Dodgers, the only team above 500 in the National League West. The Giants have the second best mark. They're a game below 500. The Padres have lost five in a row. They're 14-18. The reigning National League pennant winners, that would be the Diamondbacks, four games below 500 as well at 13-17 straight up this season. Low scoring affair was expected last night in the Northwest. Closing total between the Braves and the Mariners was at seven. We only saw three total runs. The Atlanta Braves took an early lead, I guess you could say early, but really in the seventh, Ozzie Albies, an RBI double that scored Ronald Acuna Jr., put the Braves up 1-0. That was the score into the home half of the ninth. But the Mariners walk it off. Mitch Garver, newly acquired this offseason from Texas, two-run home run, walks it off for Seattle. The M's win 2-1 over Atlanta in the opening game of this series.
Yeah, usually it's the Atlanta Braves doing that type of damage here, being down from behind and closing late and winning these games in extras, because you can usually rely on their bullpen. But you take a look at some of the pitching matchups here, you can't fault the Braves. And even though Strider's down in that rotation, you feel like, oh no, the Atlanta Braves are going to struggle the rest of the way. Freed hasn't been good, but he was great last night. Six innings pitched, no earned runs, and ERA now at 4.02. It lets you know how good that performance was last night just to get him to around a 4.0. But also, we talked about the total of this game. I thought the Braves would win this. And yes, they're up 1-0 in the bottom of the ninth inning. But we also thought runs might be a little bit tough to come by up there in the Pacific Northwest. And they were. Only three total runs in that game. Nice comeback victory for the Mariners, turning the tables on what usually the Atlanta Braves do, Ben, to other teams.
Yeah, absolutely so. It was a pitcher's duel yesterday. Seattle, the money line underdog, wins outright in the opening game of their series. The Mariners playing pretty good baseball. They've won seven of their last 10 games. Seattle now best record in the American League West, 16-13, three games above 500. The Rangers, second best mark for the reigning World Series champions at 15-14. But as you look at the National League pennant odds, it's still the top two. The Dodgers plus 180. 40 cents back. The Atlanta Braves in the Phils, that third best number at 7-1. We really, Donnie, expect that to be the case for a good majority of this MLB season, unless something drastic really happens in the National League.
No, you're right. We talk about the shelves, right? You take the first three teams, the Dodgers, Braves, and Phillies, markedly better to me than any other Major League Baseball team here in the league. You take a look at the Chicago Cubs, nice team, Cardinals, nice team, Diamondbacks, can they catch lightning in a bottle? But you also have to remind ourselves, the reason why the Dodgers are priced so high at a plus 180 price over the Braves and the Phillies are, yes, there was a lot of bets coming into the Dodgers before the season. Also keep in mind the Dodgers are in first place here, and nobody out there in the West actually has a record that is above 500. So the Phillies and the Braves will be neck and neck probably through most parts of the summer within five games of each other. There's a good chance that the Dodgers, if they stay healthy, can run away with that division. So therefore you say, like, well, why the Diamondbacks 18-1? Just told you that because you do the pricing typically goes, Ben, the higher up the ladder you are, the better pricing you go, which means you win your division. You don't have to worry about the wild card. You're going to be at home for your first round series, even if it's proving that it doesn't make all that much difference over the past couple years. The pricing has to be that way. Dodgers, Braves, Phillies in that order, it makes sense, and they should be wide favorites over the rest of the field.
You got to double the price and then add a buck to even get to the Cubbies. Chicago at 15-1 to win the National League from the Phillies price. The Phils did lose yesterday to the Angels out in but still Philadelphia has won 11 of its previous 14 games. Pitcher's duel, as we shared in Seattle. Pitcher's duel in Milwaukee as well. The Tampa Bay Rays on the road against the Brew Crew win 1-0. Ryan Pepio puts together a great performance on the bump. What is it? Is it Ryan or Ross?
Ryan. Yeah.
Ryan. Yeah, Ryan Pepiot.
Like
a great performance yesterday. Shut out baseball, only allowing two hits. The Rays get a win in Milwaukee.
Yeah, it's crazy, too. The Rays get a win. They have five runners left on base, which isn't that many. They go 0-for-3 with runners in scoring position and still win that baseball game. That's a Rays game here, and particularly also.
Yeah.
We've seen the Brewers break out the bats recently here, which is kind of crazy without Christian Yelich. That's more of a Brewers game, 1-0 here. Hey, by the way, Brewers, even with that loss, still 17-11, having a good season.
And the Cubbies get a win as well, down 1-0 entering the eighth inning. They score twice in the eighth and the ninth to knock off the New York Mets. Major League Baseball, PGA Tour Talk next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Live right here on this Tuesday on the Early Line, as we approach even more of the summer months, we keep a focus on the PGA Tour. Keith Stewart joins us live right here on this Tuesday on the Early Line. Keith, we appreciate the time as always. Thanks for being here to preview the CJ Cup. Byron Nelson. It's a tournament that's been longstanding on the PGA Tour with a snazzy new name, but we still head back to Texas for the PGA Tour this week.
Well, it's an exciting time because we're building up towards our second major championship of the year, the PGA Championship. We've got LIV Golf in play this week. We've got a couple of the world's best down there in Dallas. So we got to break it all down and figure out how to win some more money, boys.
Keith, before we look forward, let's look back. Last week, the team event at the Zurich, and it was the Irishman, Rory McIlroy and Shane Lowry, winning in a playoff. Although a team event, the celebration was high for those two guys following, and for Rory McIlroy back in the winner's circle, where the form has not been all that great on tour the last couple of months. What can a win, even in a team event, do for Rory McIlroy in the rest of this PGA Tour season?
Well, I think it's a tremendous moment for Rory's camp because he's heading into Valhalla, which is the last place that he won a major championship back in 2014. And we keep talking about his major drought year after year after year. Rory really wasn't or hasn't been a part of much of the story so far this season. He's only got one top 10 prior to this win here, and it is a team event, but a place Valhalla where he's comfortable. Now, all of a sudden, John Rahm hasn't won on LIV yet. Is Rory the second best golfer in the world behind Mr. Scottie Scheffler?
How about that? Battling from tour to tour here. We talk about the LIV Golf and the PGA. How about the LPGA Tour? Keith staying hot out there with a 35-1 ticket last week on Hannah Green, which I think this means Nelly Korda did not lose in that tournament and didn't play. So two questions. Great win on 35-1. And when does Korda get back out there to continue her winning ways?
Well, right now, Nelly's scheduled to play in a week. The ladies are traveling from L.A. over to New Jersey, so they're taking this week off. They're going to play next week just outside New York City at the Cognizant Founders Cup, which is a great event at Upper Montclair Country Club right here in my home state. Nelly is scheduled to come back then and go for number 6 in a row, but when she took the week off, I went with Hannah Green. Now, Hannah Green, she missed the cut out at the Chevron in Houston, but she's had a lot of great showings after missing a cut, and she's won. She was the defending champion there at LA at Wilshire Country Club. She loves that golf course. Australian golfer, very much like the Sand Belt. A lot of ground game at Wilshire. Just a perfect fit. She goes 5 under, guys. She goes deep on the back nine Sunday, blows away the field, wins by 3, second week in a row, winning on the LPGA Tour. You know, we're excited. I mean, we're getting hot. It's major season. Read the line. Let's go.
Nelly Korda did win the Chevron Championship 2 weeks ago, the week following the first major of the year in the men's golfing world, of course, at Augusta. There is dominance going on in both tours right now. Scottie Scheffler on the men's side. Nelly Korda, 5 consecutive victories, tying an LPGA Tour record. Yeah. So, Keith, now we go this week, of course, to the Byron Nelson, the CJ Cup. Byron Nelson, new name, but a staple on the PGA Tour in the Dallas area. What do folks need to know about the track this week out in Texas?
Well, let me just break it down real quick with 3 keys. The first one is that this is the 7th longest golf course on tour, and we're talking about TPC Craig Ranch, where they're going to play par 71, 7,400 plus yards, and these guys, Last year, the event was plagued by rain when Jason Day won, and they've got rain again this week. They've got over 6 inches of rain leading up to the event, and it's supposed to rain through all four rounds. So length is going to be a huge factor. Of course, that leads me into point two, which is in the approach game, the length of this golf course has over a third of the approach shots coming in from over 200 yards. So we need our long iron and our mid iron players. Again, length a factor. And the third thing is that this is a complete birdie fest. TPC Lee, KH Lee won back-to-back years. Jason Day won last year. The average winning score is 25 under par. This is a race to 30 birdies in 1 week, and it's going to be wet. So you've got to have the guys that can really score and light up the leaderboard if you're going to keep up and be anywhere near a chance of winning come Sunday afternoon.
Let's take a look at some of the favorites in this tournament here, Keith. At under 25-1, you take a look at Scott, Zalatoris, Day, Kim, and Spieth. Are we headhunting for some of the superstars in this tournament? Thank goodness Scottie Scheffler isn't out here with a plus 220 price. Looks like the field is wide open. Of the favorites here, who are you looking to maybe strike on?
Ooh, I tell you what, Donnie, I do not like the favorites this week. A lot of them are plagued by issues, which are going to cause a problem that go back to those three keys. I mean, Jordan Spieth, he's missed three of his last five cuts. He's won twice in 7 years. I can't see how he's the favorite at any tournament, even in his hometown. Siwoo Kim is another guy. He can't score with the putter, the best ball striker in the field. And if you're going to make 30 subpar scores, you're going to have to make some putts. Jason Day, he's been awful on approach. I mean, he's been really poor with his iron game. And as a result, I just don't see him being an option. And then Will Zalatoris, again, like Siwoo Kim with the putter. I'm looking a little bit further down the board when I get to my early leans.
When you look at Jason Day, he won last year, snapping a long losing skid. He comes back with that second best price, tied for the second best price at 18-1. So, Keith, the early leans on the early line. Who gets your attention if you're not looking at the favorites?
I'm looking right there in the middle of the board, and I think there's some awesome value for a guy like Thomas Dietrich, who played well last week at the Zurich with his partner Bobby McIntyre. Again, filling up the cup last week at the Zurich is a good thing to see when you're heading into this kind of birdie fest. He was 17th at the Valspar. He was second in Houston, and of course, last week he was 8th at Zurich. The other guy I'm looking at a little bit further down the betting board, and that's Mark Hubbard. And a lot of people are talking about him. He opened the week at plus 7,000. He's already dropped 10 points down to plus 6,000. I mean, this guy is a hot commodity. He was third place with Ryan Brehm. And no offense to Ryan Brehm, but I think, you know, Mark Hubbard was definitely the horse at the Zurich last week. You know, this guy, he's made every cut this year, 11 in a row, and a lot of them have been inside the top 30. I love Mark Hubbard to fill up the cup all week down there in Dallas.
Keith Stewart, we appreciate the time. Thank you for being here on this Tuesday on the early line at the Byron Nelson, even the CJ Cup. Byron Nelson with the PGA Championship, not all that far away. Keith, again, we appreciate the time. Some more NFL draft discussions following the weekend in Detroit. And now for next year in the NFL. That's up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
For 2024, we are done with the mock drafts. We are done predicting the slot that a player might go in the NFL draft. Now we forecast the future in the upcoming 2024 NFL season and how these young rooks will now perform in the National Football League. So, of course, Caleb Williams went first overall. It should be no surprise to see Caleb Williams as the favorite to win Offensive Rookie of the Year. It was a historic quarterback draft ERS in 2024. Six QBs in the opening round, the most we have ever seen in round number one in the modern draft era. All six of the quarterbacks go in the top 12. So the expectation is, at least in today's current NFL climate, if you're a top 10, top 15 pick at the quarterback position, you don't often get the benefit of sitting on the bench and learning from a veteran to get your feet wet into the National Football League. You are expected to perform from the very jump. So let's forecast how these quarterbacks are set to do moving forward this year. We start with the Offensive Rookie of the Year odds. Again, Caleb Williams, plus 210 to win Offensive Rookie of the Year. Marvin Harrison Jr., a wide receiver, second best price at 6-1, but nearly $4 behind Caleb.
It should be that way, though, that plus 210 price, because we're taking a look at a situation that is unlike a lot of situations that rookies step into. You have a plethora of weapons around you in a division now that you can win right out of the gate, and you will get those bonus points. And also coming off a season where C.J. Stroud was absolutely tremendous. Forget about rookie of the year chances. You take a look at the MVP odds last year, which were getting substantially less week by week by week on CJ Stroud. So I agree with that price point. Also, let's say how far-fetched this actually is. We're expecting Caleb to win this. Victor Wembanyama was like an once every 20-year prospect in the NBA, but Chet Holmgren was still just right behind him here to win the possible rookie of the year in the NBA, which lets you believe how good Caleb is, because he's a plus 210. The next closest guy is at a 6-1 price here, a market favorite here, and rightfully so. If he plays all 17 games and plays decent football, he's probably going to be able to get the stat accumulation that you need to win this. So I agree with the FanDuel Sportsbook to make him that decided a favorite this early on, Ben.
So that was my point yesterday. It's often difficult to compare to other leagues, but we have seen in the NBA draft and the NHL draft this past summer, generational talents, the guy that was promised to be that number one overall pick, Victor Wembanyama, Connor Bedard, of course, in the NHL for the Chicago Blackhawks, and Caleb Williams actually closed with even a better price than both Vic and Connor to go one overall, minus 100,000. A generational talent, highly touted, I would say so. But in the National Football League, things are different. And I made this point yesterday. Quarterbacks do not often win Offensive Rookie of the Year. It is one of the few awards where a quarterback can win said hardware and is not just slotted in. NFL MVP is a quarterback award. Heisman Trophy is a quarterback award. But only four quarterbacks, including C.J. Stroud from a season ago, have won Offensive Rookie of the Year in the NFL in the last decade. Why? Because when you're drafted early, if you're a top five pick, a top 10 pick, normally it means the team you were drafted on struggled the year before, does not have the highest outlook entering the next season. But Chicago drafted first overall because of the trade 2 years ago with the Carolina Panthers. The Bears won five of their final seven games, and Chicago has a win total this upcoming year of 8.5. Chicago is expected to flirt with the postseason. If the Bears are going to be good, Caleb Williams is going to be the guy to lead them to above 500. Thus, this time for me, Donnie, it actually makes sense to bet Caleb Williams, even with the short price of plus 210, to win Rookie of the Year.
No, it does. And also, you're trying to look down who has the chance to overtake Caleb Williams, who rightfully so should be in the driver's seat. Marvin Harrison Jr. has a really good shot there at a 6-1 price because he's going to play with an established quarterback that is going to force feed him the football. That usually brings good things here. You take a look at Jaden Daniels at a 9-1 price. We'll see the type of effort we get out of him. But Ben, there's a legitimate chance if he plays 17 games, he can rush for 1,000 yards, which would certainly be an absolute anomaly here and get him some of those votes. But the guys that I'm not betting, Malik Neighbors at a 14-1 price. You know, I'd rather bet Keon Coleman at 21-1 and Xavier Worthy at 16-1. The quarterback is just too much to get over here for the New York Giants when Keon Coleman's going to be playing with an established guy that is going to be able to launch footballs 60 yards down the field to him. And the same thing with Xavier Worthy, going to get a chance to play with Patrick Mahomes, maybe the best quarterback ever. I take those two wide receivers over Neighbors, but I agree with Caleb Williams. He's supposed to be at that plus 210 price.
We could have this conversation for many more minutes, but we must transition back to the NBA. Our coach joins us next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
A triple header of NBA playoff action on a Monday. Two series are now done. Three of the four teams that will qualify for the second round of the Western Conference postseason have already reached that second round. We've got three more games on this Tuesday. There is so much to get to around the association. We need the coach. We need the scouting report live right here on this Tuesday on the early line. Enter J.Y. James Young. J.Y., thank you for joining us here on this Tuesday on the early line.
Good to be on with you guys. Three games last night, three games tonight, and a bunch of series ended, and a couple more could end tonight.
Two of those three series yesterday did come to a close, and one might virtually be done between the Celtics and the Heat. We start first, though, at the home of the reigning NBA champions, the Denver Nuggets. The good old gentleman sweep over the LA Lakers in five games. The Nuggets win last night 108-106. A similar tune to game number two. Jamal Murray, the game-winning jumper with just 3.6 seconds remaining. His second game-winning shot in the final 5 seconds in this single series. But JY, when you look at the story of this game, really it was the story of the set. The Lakers had a lead at the halftime break in all five games, only to lose four of them at the end of regulation. So what do you place more of the credit on? The Lakers coughing things up down the stretch, or Michael Malone and the Nugs making the proper adjustments in the second half?
I'm going to go a little bit of both, Ben, to be honest with you. But let's start with the Lakers. And we probably have so much time that, you know, eventually to get through all of this. But they're just too top-heavy, Ben. I mean, you're relying on a soon-to-be 39-year-old superstar and an Anthony Davis who, you know, listen, played well, rebounding, didn't get enough shots, but they just don't have enough depth to overcome it. And to me, LeBron looks like a guy that at the end of a game looks gassed. And when you are almost 39 years old and you got to give your teams 30, 11, 9, and 4 just to compete in a game, that's just way too much that LeBron had to take on. And just a matter of fact, on the other side with Denver, like, I almost want to think about, like, what do I equate Jamal Murray to? Like, I'm not going to say, like, Robert Horry because, like, he's a better player, but in big shots, big spots, what I mean is like, he plays so much better in the postseason than he does in the regular season. If you look at his numbers, he goes up 3 to 4 points a game, and he's almost unstoppable. If you're LA, you probably should have doubled that ball screen, but the way they ran that side pick and roll, if you double it, then you got Joker all by himself. So it's pick your poison. Great shot by Jamal Murray.
I actually thought the Lakers played well in this series. If you can play well, losing 4-1 here. The Denver Nuggets are a really good team, but we don't have to spend a lot of time on this. But where do the Lakers go in the future here? Like, is number one, is LeBron James going to stay? And also, if he does it make any difference here, coach? Like, that's back-to-back years where Denver's like, yeah, we're just markedly better than you guys. How do they actually improve here with Anthony Davis and LeBron James if they both stay?
The problem is what do they have tradable? I mean, supposedly a draft, and I think they have 3 first-round draft picks that they can move. You know, the problem is that people are looking at a guy like a Trae Young that could have come available. Trae Young doesn't solve the problem with the Lakers. The Lakers need to be long and athletic. They need wing guys that can defend, that can lock people up. If you go get Trae Young, it makes your offense better, but it makes your defense markedly worse. So to me, the Lakers have to go find a way to get some wing depth that can actually get stops. And I think that's the thing. When you look at these teams, like, you know, how young Denver is, how young Oklahoma City is, how young Minnesota is, like Houston may take a step up next year. Sacramento's relatively young, right? How does Memphis come back? Like, these are young athletic teams, Donnie. These aren't old grinding teams. They got to get quicker, taller, and athletic. And I don't know what they have tradable to go get that.
So the Lakers, as of right now, the lottery order still has to be figured out, but the Lakers are not slated to have a first-round pick this upcoming June in the 2024 NBA draft. Of course, that is pertinent because of the future of Bronny James and what it means for the future of LeBron James. Donnie asked you what the Lakers can do if both LeBron and AD remain. I ask you this, 21 years in the NBA, 39 years old. LeBron James, though, still played 71 games, averaged more than 35 minutes, and pretty much averaged 26, 8, and 7 throughout the entirety of this NBA regular season, and obviously even stepped it up into the playoffs. So simply, JY, will LeBron James be a Los Angeles Laker next NBA season?
Yes, because I think he's going to push the Lakers into a box to go draft Bronny. I think he's going to play this trump card, and he's going to get it. Because at the end of the day, if he were to, you know, decline the player option, Ben, he's looking at 51 million dollars, give or take, is he opting out of. Like, where is he getting that? Where is he? I mean, unless someone takes, you know, some kind of mid-level exception, which could be 10 million or 6 million, depending if, you know, you're on a cap. Listen, I'm you know, I'm a business school teacher as well, but like 40 to 44 million dollars, that's a lot of bread to be leaving on the table. And the Lakers would have to comply if it were to be a sign and trade, right? So to me, I think he comes back to the Lakers. Bronny probably ends up there and they try to make one last run of it. But I will say this. At age 38, 39, this is statistically like, I don't know, like Tom Brady-esque? It's the closest thing I can come to it. The stats that this guy is putting up at this advanced age is unbelievable. The problem is, like we said, Ben, he just doesn't have enough help to get him to another championship.
Talking about not having enough help here, that certainly was the Pelicans in their series against the OKC Thunder. It was an absolute sleep, 4-0, which included last night's victory, 97-89 over the Pelicans. The Pelicans at home couldn't even get into the 90s here. Did you have a takeaway from the series, Coach? Was it, okay, the Thunder are ready to advance here, let's see what they can do next, or the Pelicans just weren't game in this series, and there are still question marks for you about OKC?
Yes, to both. First start off with Oklahoma City. Guys, I'm going to be openly admit this. I was wrong on this team because I thought that I didn't know maturity-wise if they were ready for the spot. Now, I know that this was a Pelicans team that was down, obviously, Zion. But to me, the defensive intensity of this team, the fact that going into the fourth quarter, down by one, to outscore them by nine, to go win the game and close out the series, that showed maturity, guys. And that's what the culture that Mark Daigneault and obviously Sam Presti has brought to Oklahoma City is that. So to me, the maturity of them, and guys, like, we can't discount this team. This team is dangerous enough that if they can defend, they can go to the finals. They're that good offensively and that dynamic. When you look on the other side, when you look at a team like New Orleans, let's be brutally honest. Brandon Ingram's got to get traded. They can't run this back with him and Zion. And here's the other reason why. A guy that I think is really valuable, who shot the ball poorly the last couple of games, is Trey Murphy III. He is not a two guard in the NBA. He is a three. You move him to the three. You have Zion at the four. You keep Valanciunas at the five. You go get a better two guard. You trade Brandon Ingram, because I don't think Brandon Ingram and Zion can coexist in the same lineup moving forward long term. And you should be able to, as a young enough player, to get a lot of return for Brandon Ingram.
OKC, third best price now to win the NBA championship, but well behind Denver, who is plus 210, well behind Boston at plus 135. OKC, second best price to win the Western Conference, but behind the Denver Nuggets, who advanced to the second round in a matchup against the Minnesota Timberwolves. Denver, an odds-on favorite to win the West at minus 125. Quickly here, JY, 30 seconds left in this segment. Boston takes a 3-1 series lead over Miami. Is the series over in five?
The series is over in five, but the bigger concern is going to be the health of Kristaps Porzingis, particularly if they play a team like Cleveland, who has a lot of size and could be able to take advantage of them on the boards.
So we'll talk about that up next with a triple header of Eastern Conference postseason action on this Tuesday night. A preview of all three next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
A triple header of NBA playoff action on this Tuesday. We have three games, three series, all in the Eastern Conference. Two of the three, an opportunity to clinch a spot into the second round and keep advancing around the association. Joel Embiid, after game number four in Philadelphia, that the Sixers lost to the Knicks by five, 97-92, complained or at least expressed some frustration at the lack of Philadelphia fans, or maybe just too many New York fans there in Philly. JY was part of the problem, at least for game number three. It's game number five back tonight inside Madison Square Garden. JY, you going?
Sorry, I don't have the amount of money to pay for that. Really quick, folks. So I paid like $225 a ticket for game number three. Guys, it's like $700-$800 in New York. Give me a $225. I go there and hang out with Donnie and the rest of the Sixer fans. Hey, by the way, very hospitable, guys. Very hospitable, the Philly fans. I was quite shocked.
I was quite surprised to see JY on Friday morning. Glad to have him here to be able to preview game number five tonight. The Knicks one win away from a playoff series victory over Philadelphia. 4-point spread in favor of New York back inside Madison Square Garden. The over-under now up to 203 and a hook. If New York, two-part question for you. If New York clinches the series tonight, how do the Knicks get it done if Philly forces a game six back in the city of brotherly love? How do the 76ers survive?
Well, for the Knicks, what they have to do is continue to frustrate Joel Embiid. Joel Embiid that I feel like at times is more willing to look for foul calls than to play his game. So to me, I think that's the key is, and you saw Tibbs kind of do something un-Tibbs like. He came out of his normal defensive stuff because of Mitchell Robinson. He had OG and Obi beg him to guard him. OG, Precious, did a great job of frustrating Joel Embiid, particularly in that fourth quarter. So, listen, you're not going to get 47 out of Brunson. You know what? You would hope that Josh Hart is somewhat better than he was in game number four, although he had been good the first three games. I want people to keep looking at a guy like a Deuce McBride, where you can get his over threes at 1.5. This is someone that's hit this 9 of the last 15, 3 out of 4, 5 out of 8 since the trade of Barrett and Quickly. So look at someone like Miles McBride, not scared of the moment, and with DiVincenzo struggling, he gets going. Flip side, guys, listen, Tobias Harris, he can't be any worse, right? Like, I mean, and it's just the $34 million. Donnie, I'm sorry. I'm not trying to get you all fired up. But he's got to give you guys something. He's got to give something, and he's got to be aggressive. He's got to look for his shot. Besides that, if you can't do that, you got to get more out of Batum. But the problem is you need Batum to defend. Tobias Harris must be better.
Some people in the city of Philadelphia here, Coach, are saying to themselves, hey, I hope the Sixers lose tonight because the minute that horn sounds, Tobias Harris's contract is over in the city of Philadelphia. So that's one thing to look at. But the other thing to look at, Joel Embiid, Coach, let me ask you this from a perspective of how well he's playing when he's on the court. 127 minutes played. He's a plus 43 out there. Should I say the Sixers are a plus 43. When he leaves the court, which is only actually 33 minutes, they're a 38-point deficit here. What can the Sixers do when Joel Embiid is not on the court to hang around? You don't have to increase the lead, but just don't give it up in a couple of minutes here.
Well, the problem is, Donnie, is when he comes out of the game, the lane just completely opens up. And the problem is you don't have a shot-blocking presence down low. That's not Paul Reed. I mean, you could take a chance. Maybe this is crazy. And play a guy like Mo Bamba, who is taller, more athletic, could block some shots, rather than a Paul Reed, who just seems to come in the game and just foul and just do dumb stuff. The other thing that's going to be interesting to watch really quick offensively for New York is they used their ball screen higher, and Joel Embiid was in drop coverage. That allowed Brunson to get to that spot, right, at that kill zone, an elbow pull-up. Does Philadelphia change what they do? Do they have Embiid blitz it? Do they try and come with another kind of strategy? Do you ice it? But the problem is Brunson's really good at rejecting and going right. Philadelphia's got to change their ball screen defense with Joel Embiid on the floor because you cannot let Jalen Brunson get to that elbow for a pull-up jumper.
47 points in game number four, 34.5 is the points prop. I would love a field goal attempt prop for Jalen Brunson, and I'd take the over even if it was listed at 28.5, knowing how vital and really the only offensive option for the New York Knicks at this juncture. Let's keep it rolling. Into the Pfizer Forum we go. I don't think we expect to see Giannis or Dame tonight. And the Bucks are on the brink of elimination. Indiana could clinch this opening round series in Milwaukee. The Pacers booked as a 4-point road favorite. Over under 216 on the rise as well. What is the key for Indiana if they are about to advance to the second round of the postseason?
Honestly, Tyrese Halliburton is starting to play better. 9 points game one, 12. 18, 24. He's starting to play better. along with Siakam, that they could play the way they played. And shout out to Miles Turner. By the way, the best thing that happened to this Pacer team is that Phoenix accepted and matched that DeAndre Ayton offer sheet. Because if that would have happened, Miles Turner would have been gone. And Miles Turner is playing fantastic basketball, 29-9-4 last game. They just got to do what they do, Ben, which is get the game up and down in a fast break pace. At some point, Milwaukee is going to burst because they don't have the capacity to do so. I fully expect this series to be closed out tonight.
It is so interesting because there's so many big picture conversations then to be had about teams we expected to contend for a championship that might not even look the same entering next year. We lost JY. JY is now back. JY, we'll get your thoughts on Cleveland and Orlando on the other side. Don't give Donnie a little bit of chaos to start off a Tuesday morning. He will crack up just a little bit. Don't know what happened. What happened there, JY? We need you here for the entirety of the scouting report.
I don't know. You know, sometimes, you know, I gotta make sure I pay the internet bill or something. But it definitely
is that the practice facility? What's going on over there? Come on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, come on. All right, listen, we've got another Game 5 to break down where the Cavs are a 5-point home favorite. Who takes the series lead? Find out next if JY is here.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Live right here on this Tuesday, a triple header Tuesday in the association. We have previewed two of the three games on this Tuesday night, both of the two games and the two series that could be over tonight. Now we go to game number 5 in Cleveland. The Cavs dominant on their home floor. Orlando match, though, down in the state of Florida. Both teams, JY, in their two games with home floor advantage, won easily. And easily covered a number. Cleveland now back in the land for game number 5 tonight in a series tied at 2 games apiece. The Cavaliers booked as a 5-point home favorite. Will we see home floor advantage continue here in this set?
I think so, at least for the start. Guys, I think my best play is going to be Cleveland in the first half, spread on the money line, minus 128. If you look at games 1 and games 2, up by 12 and 14 at the break, a better performance by Orlando in the second half. On the flip side, you know, Orlando got into great starts at home. So to me, this is still two teams that don't have a lot of playoff success, and I think the first half is going to be a struggle. Now, Orlando should try and play as close to the best as possible. But I'm going to take Cleveland minus 2.5 and minus 128 to have a first half lead of 3 or more points, and then I think it gets very competitive. If the game is close to the break, let's say 5 or less points, then maybe I will jump on Orlando on the money line in the second half because they play better in the second half. But if it's a 10-point game or more, I'll stay away. I think Cleveland jumps out early. Let's see the adjustment at the half by Jamal Mosley and the Orlando Magic.
Yeah, maybe the best adjustment in this series is just being on your home court, because being on the road, those teams have been terrible. Being at home, those teams have been very good. But also, let's shift a little bit of gears here and have some fun. The NBA offseason is sometimes more entertaining than the playoffs and the regular season themselves. Let's start with the Phoenix Suns here, Coach. You take a look at a team that, coming in, new ownership group, major trades have been made, superstar players across the board. Money is not an object here on the Phoenix Suns winning and or losing here. But the question matters here. This is a team that was not supposed to get swept in round number 1 of the NBA playoffs by any team out here. What are we looking at for the Suns this offseason, Coach?
Let's be honest. There's got to be, Donnie, major changes in Phoenix. And let's be honest. Yes, Matt Ishbia has no problem spending money. But when you spend money like a drunken sailor and try to set up your team like a video game, this is what happens. Why? Kevin Durant, Bradley Beal, Devin Booker. Too similar in the fact that they need the ball to score. Not as much as Durant, because he's a catch, one dribble, pull-up guy, but definitely Beal and Booker. What happened was Phoenix, because of the injuries to CP3 last year, saw Devin Booker's assist numbers go up and thought he could play the point. Good numbers as a point guard, not a point guard, meaning he's not a facilitator, a setter up of the offense to make your team better. So what does Phoenix have to do? They got to make a trade. You can't trade Bradley Beal. Shout out to Bradley Beal. $51 million. Got the extension, got the no-trade clause, and got out of D.C. And now no one's going to want to trade for him. So now it's Durant or it's Booker. And if you're Matt Ishbia, even though you can get far more of a return for Booker because of his age and the years left on his deal, you have to trade Kevin Durant. You need to be younger. You need to have more depth. Kevin Durant should get moved. I think by him complaining about how he was used in the offense, I think that is a meaning that they may go ahead and trade him. Also, look out for Frank Vogel. He's in trouble. He could get fired.
We need JY, the source guy, because I'm hearing on the streets that Devin Booker might want to be here in the Big Apple as well. But to your point about Frank Vogel, from our guy, Sham Sharania, as a part of FanDuel TV, sources tell him the Suns will consider a coaching change. I'm told Kevin Durant had real issues with the offense, him feeling like he was relegated to being in the corner. Donnie asked you about the Phoenix Suns. I'll talk about Frank Vogel, Darwin Ham for L.A., and maybe tonight, JY, if the Bucks do end their season inside the Pfizer Forum to the Indiana Pacers, could we see all three of those guys, Frank Vogel for Phoenix, Darwin Ham in Los Angeles, and even Glenn Doc Rivers with the Milwaukee Bucks looking for a new job next year?
I think Ham will be done. I think Vogel probably will be done, perhaps, if Durant stays. Doc will use the excuse of injuries, because Doc always has an excuse that why it didn't work. But if I'm Milwaukee, I cut the ties with them. All three are gone. The problem with Milwaukee is Budenholzer, Griffin, Doc, new coach. That's four coaches in 13 months. That's a little bit too much. But the first two definitely should be let go.
Listen, JY, the source guy, maybe JY, the new head coach of the Milwaukee Bucks, if he can get
his assistant
with how quickly
you're
the turnover
my assistant.
Is.
I would do you it. Two. Listen, I'm not, no Kevin,
box
no Kevin
one.
Wall.
All day
no
long, Kevin. Box yeah, and no one. Kevin. We trap no all Kevin. Night. JY, thank you. More of the Early Line next.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.